Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Losada, and today's birth stories are with Krista Thompson. Krista shares her progression from a first prodromal labor that ended with her baby being taken to the NICU to a precipitous second hospital birth with fetal ejection reflex, and finally an unassisted-like home birth experience. She also gives us a glimpse into her struggles with codependency and why it was so important for her to take the reins of this last pregnancy. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Vistaprint, helping you own the now in any situation. To get free shipping on all your business cards, any style, any quantity, go to Vistaprint.com and enter the promo code Birthful. Limited time offer. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Family Album, a family-focused photo sharing app that makes it easy for parents to share photos and videos of their kids with their family. Find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you, as always, for all the love you give the show. If what you hear is helpful, do make sure you subscribe. It is free, and that way you won't miss a thing. And to support this podcast, please support its sponsors, which for this week's case are Vistaprint and Family Album. Now, we are well underway in our celebration of these 5 years of Birthful, and I want to remind you about this week's giveaway bundle because you can still enter. All the details are on an Instagram post at Birthful Podcast. That's our Instagram handle, at Birthful Podcast. And you can enter until tomorrow, Thursday, January 16th at noon Eastern Time. Noon Eastern Time. And then that evening, join me for a Facebook Live event at 8 p.m. Eastern Time with the fabulous Abby Thuring, who is also known as the Badass Breastfeeder. And we will be chatting about breastfeeding and postpartum, as well as announcing the winner of this week's amazing bundle. And that bundle includes a Connecting with Baby course by Dr. Jay Warren, 20% discount off of the Mother Shift program by Jesse Harold, a deck of pregnancy affirmation cards, plus an amber teething necklace, both from Mama Natural, the book Real Food for Pregnancy by Lily Nichols, an autographed copy of the book Babies Are Not Pizzas by Rebecca Decker from Evidence-Based Birth, and a Playtex nursing camisole, and a 3-pack of Playtex Maternity V-Front Hipsters, as well as my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation course. It is an amazing amount of things. You still have time to enter the giveaway until Thursday, January 16th at noon Eastern Time. And go find the post on our Instagram account, which is at Birthful Podcast. And then join us at 8 p.m. on the Birthful Facebook page for a live event with Abby Thuring, the Badass Breastfeeder, to see if you won. On top of that, we do on-the-spot surprise giveaways with the people on the call. So make sure you join us for the live at facebook.com/birthful. All right, so Krista Thompson is here today to share about her three births, but more specifically about her third birth, which was, as she wrote to me, intentional in every detail, every sound, and every person in attendance. And that was quite different from what she experienced with her first. Part of the motivation to be so intentional was to grab the reins of her most recent pregnancy and truly give it the focus she felt it deserved, since at the same time, Krista was having some real struggles with her husband. In fact, she filed for divorce while 3 months pregnant. So we go a little bit into where that was coming from and what led her to really dig deep into what codependency means. And now she feels she's in recovery from that. So I do appreciate that her biggest takeaway from all this was the realization that she didn't need to do it all, and find out what that meant for her. Let's get to it. Krista, welcome. It is so nice to have you here on the podcast today.
Good morning. It's so great to have you too. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into your story.
Sure. My name's Krista Thompson. I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This is actually my hometown where I grew up, although I spent some time living in Florida and New York City as well. I came back to Pittsburgh in 2014, and I've been here ever since. Have started my little family here, grown to, I guess, a little bit bigger than a little family these days. I have three children. I'm a member of the Three Under Three Club. No twins in there. I actually just had three babies in 3 years. I am a lawyer by profession. I work for a corporation here in the greater Pittsburgh area. I am a martial artist. I love practicing Tung Sido and Taekwondo, which I've been doing since I was a child. I am a fanatic about music and musical theater. Most importantly is I'm a mom. I'm really into conscious parenting, and before I became a parent, of course, I was going through the journey towards my births, and I'm excited to share them about with you today.
Yeah, and I'd like to, I know you wanted to focus on that third birth, which was, as you described when you wrote to me, amazing and like the perfect dream birth, which I'm so excited to hear about. But before we get into that, how were the first two?
Sure. You know, I don't really know what it was in my life that made me, predetermined to ultimately have a home birth. But as I go back and look at my three birth stories, they were a progression towards home birth. So I had all three. My first birth was your traditional, if you will, hospital birth. I was trying to have a natural birth, but I had very long prodromal labor for weeks leading up to my birth. And by the time I actually got to the birth of my son, I opted for the epidural, and of course he was born 2 hours later. I had a doula with me for my first birth, who was the greatest blessing to me, really helped me to become more informed in my as I progressed through pregnancy, and to determine exactly what it was that ideally I would have in my birth if things went according to plan. And it was really, it wasn't in any way a traumatic experience, with the exception of by the time my son was born, because I had a very long labor experience. I had hit the markers in the hospital checklist, if you will, for potentially having chorio, which of course is an infection that can affect mom and be passed to baby. And so unfortunately, because of that, they took my son right away from me. I really held him for a matter of seconds before they took him to the NICU and very unnecessarily flooded his body with a bunch of antibiotics and tests for a few days, which made me realize that, this maybe isn't how it has to be. maybe this next time I need to do something different. So I had my son in the normal hospital NICU experience, if to the extent that that's normal. And by the time I left there, I said, it's going to be different next time. It's going to be different.
And there was a lot of things in there that prompted questions in my mind. So first of all, I don't think we've talked about prodromal labor in a while on the show. And I want to clarify what that is for people that may not be familiar with the word. And so how would you define it?
Sure. Well, prodromal labor is, unlike Braxton Hicks contractions, it's labor that feels very real and to a certain extent is real, but it's not productive labor. It's usually due to a malpositioned baby or some other factor. In my case, they thought, I had some scar tissue present, and that they thought that, my body was trying to kind of work to start dilating, but it just wasn't able to do it. So I was having for several weeks in the evening, maybe for 3 or 4 hours at a time, contractions. And I kept thinking, wow, okay, I'm going into labor. This is really exciting. However, my body wasn't actually going into labor.
And you said they'd hit in the evenings, which is very common. Was that making you super tired and not being able to get good sleep? Or how was it affecting you other than the, obviously the mind game of, is this it? No, it's not. Is it? No, it's not.
A mind game it is, isn't it? Yes, it was. And I wasn't as educated as I am now. So you know, anytime your body is showing signs that it's, you think you're going into labor, you're trying to encourage it along. And, you know, I hadn't listened to your podcast yet, Adriana, so I didn't really know. You try to ignore it and try to distract yourself and do something else, you know, and let your body go naturally in the process. So I was like, all right, how can I get this moving along? I'm outside walking, I'm doing hills. And eventually, after a few days of this, you're like, hey, clearly I'm not in labor. What's going on?
And so were you able at some point to get into that mindset of, okay, I'm just going to ignore this thing. Here we go again. You know,
I'd really love to tell you the answer is yes, but it wasn't. I just continued every day. And I hadn't known what prodromal labor was. My doula was informing me and advising me. And, you know, she was giving me the ignore it until you can't advice. I just wasn't really able to take that advice very well. That last month of pregnancy always feels like 100 years anyway. And for me, in that first labor experience, I was just, okay, let's keep going. What can I do to keep this in, or to turn it into real labor, you know, to kind of make that transition from this prodromal feeling where my body's going through the motions, but nothing's really happening, to flip it to that actual earlier active labor part. And so, no, I just continued to, you know, fight my body, not listen to my doula, not listen to the advice of my wonderful midwives, and just kept trying to go. And of course, several weeks passed, and, you know, I was one tired mama, and I wasn't even a mama yet.
Yeah, and it can be really hard. I mean, if, especially because you want to take control, you want to do the things, and to just lay back, sit back and not do much about it can feel frustrating if you're used to moving forward and taking charge.
That's exactly right. And that you hit it right on the head. That's my personality. I am an extreme type A personality. I'm all about fixing things. I'm a great person to have in an emergency. Like, all right, I know exactly what to do. but I was not the best person to be, you know, going through labor in a process that is inherently out of your control. I had not, as informed as I was and as educated as I made myself, I wasn't quite prepared for that experience, as often happens to moms. And so it was a really good learning experience. Of course, I was able to put that to use in my future labors, but I was not as woke as I am now on prodromal labor.
Yeah. And the thing is, birth requires different skills than what we usually, like the ones that we really apply and exalt during life, right? Like that being organized and taking charge and being on time and certainty and goal orientations and, you know, being effective and yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Those are not the skills for birth, unfortunately. It's hard to switch it up. So, oh, another thing I wanted to ask you. You mentioned that your baby hit the markers for chorio, and I can't remember the full name of the, we always call it chorio, as it's chorio.
Chorioamnio something, chorioamnio.
And it's not amniocentesis, because that's a different thing. Yeah. So what were the markers or what?
So I believe in my best recollection, there were three markers. And if you had two of the three, then, you know, they were going to treat for chorio. And I'll explain why this was so frustrating to me. This was, to me, just, you know, having a bland, medicalized, you know, not specific to the person test that had nothing to do with me. It just was, you know, general symptoms. So they called a fever one of the markers. Now, it's important, you know, to note a fever really would be a higher temperature, you know, not an elevated temperature. I mean, sometimes my temperature goes up a degree when I'm going up a flight of stairs. and so I had hit the temperature requirement, which was, I believe, precisely 100 degrees was what they considered a fever for purposes of the chorio markers. And my temperature had reached 100 degrees. The second thing they looked for was a rapid heartbeat. I'm not exactly sure what they considered rapid. I don't remember that specifically, but that was one of them. And the third one was an elevated blood pressure. I have very low blood pressure generally, and most women, of course, in labor, their blood pressure goes up as they're experiencing some amount of, you know, intensity or pain, depending on the person. And so The two that I had established, according to the hospital test, was a fever as well as an elevated blood pressure. And my elevated blood pressure was, I think, 120 over 75, which is for some people a normal blood pressure. So those were the two signs that they determined that it was likely that I had chorio and therefore potential that I passed that to my baby and caused his NICU treatment.
Yeah. And you did say he's had an epidural, but it didn't seem like you had it for long. Sometimes the epidural can also increase temperature, but then they have to assume it's an infection and not something right. caused by the epidural. So just in case, right?
Now, the part that was really frustrating to me, of course, was I was very tired by the time I had my baby, as happens to many women who have longer labors. So I hit those markers. They told me that your baby's going to be taken to the NICU. My child was born just a few minutes later, you know, under the threat of, if you don't have this baby in the next few minutes, we're going to have a C-section, despite, you know, no fetal distress. And immediately after my son was born, my blood pressure returned to normal for me, and my temperature returned to somewhere in the, you know, under the 100 degree mark, which typically would mean that potential, you know, mom does not have the sign of chorio. They do not have the signs of infection. But because I had hit them during the labor, it still required treatment according to their policy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that obviously a very frustrating way to kind of not hang out with your baby and not meet your baby. And all because of risk assessments and protocols, it seems, from what you're telling me. So I can understand how frustrating that is, especially after working so hard for weeks.
Yes, it was not exactly the entrance that I had, you know, expected. I just, you know, wanted to be able to hold my baby. And it was then for nearly 4 hours, I was separated from my child, who I had given very specific instruction. You know, I only wanted to breastfeed, so you know, please don't give him any sugar water or formula. And so I kept thinking, oh, my child is starving. And, you know, I don't even know what floor he's on. And so it's a little bit frustrating just at the beginning. However, I mean, many parents go through NICU experiences that are much more significant and serious. And that was fortunate for me that it wasn't. But it was just an unnecessary separation, unnecessary treatment. And, you know, really birthed the mama bear in me, because, you know, here I am dragging my butt down a few floors to go find my son and trying to get him out of there, because of course at this time I recognized it was completely unnecessary, you know, that he was treated, and that's where I began my advocacy for, you know, for myself and my son, and I knew I was going to have a different experience in the future.
So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, let's talk about that different experience. We'll be right back. Whether I'm off to gather with birth professionals or connecting with new parents, I make sure to have my business cards from Vistaprint with me on hand to help me go that extra step in making a connection. Now, I know that their professional business cards help me make a great first impression, because people are always commenting on my cards. No matter where you are, say hanging out with other new parents at the playground or leaving the hospital after providing doula support, your next big opportunity could be coming right now. And Vistaprint is here to help you own the now, with free shipping on any business cards in any quantity. Really, choose whatever style, finish, shape, or paper you'd like and get free shipping. And because you can pick the colors, font, designs, and images, it means that you can create something as unique and compelling as your business. The process is super easy. First, you plug in your information and logo into any of the hundreds of fresh designs available at Vistaprint, tailored to your type of company, or you can upload your own original layout. Then you pick the paper stock, style, and quantity that's right for you, and you can even upgrade to a unique touch like rounded corners. I personally love those. Then you order and receive your cards with free economy shipping when you use the code BIRTHFUL. You can feel good knowing that Vistaprint uses only carefully selected inks and responsibly sourced paper stocks. And your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed, or your money back. They will make it right. Vistaprint wants you to be able to own the now in any situation, which is why our listeners will get free shipping on all business cards any style, any quantity. Just go to Vistaprint.com and enter the promo code BIRTHFUL for free shipping on all business cards, any style, any quantity. This is a limited time offer. Own them now at Vistaprint.com, promo code BIRTHFUL. And we are back with Krista Thompson talking about her birth experiences. You've got 3 under 3. So that was the first one. Yes. Yeah. How was the second one? And what did you do differently to prepare?
So a few things that I had done differently after, you know, learning about the prodromal labor experience of the first was I began treatment throughout my pregnancy with a Webster certified chiropractor. That was the first thing that I did to really help my baby be in a better position, as well as to have optimal alignment of my spine, pelvis, you know, and everything so that, you know, birth could be more efficient.
Mm-hmm. And otherwise, did you switch anything about having a birth at a hospital or to change providers or?
So I stayed with my same providers, which was, you know, hospital-based midwives. However, they changed hospitals since the time that I was pregnant prior. And this hospital was 70 minutes from my house. Now, I live in the Pittsburgh area, as I mentioned, and there are so many hospitals in the Pittsburgh area. So I really could have went to a different hospital, but I felt really confident with the midwives that I had chosen. I felt pretty confident with the new hospital that they moved to, which, you know, seemed to be a more mother-friendly, baby-friendly hospital, and maybe wasn't as strict in their policies. And really, my plan was to just not go to the hospital. Everybody says that, right? I wish that I had listened to it sooner. It's just hard when you're that first-time mom. You feel like you need to go to the hospital when you go into labor. So this time, my plan was, listen, I'm 70 minutes away. I'm going to stay out of that hospital as long as I can. And I really prepared myself by listening to birth stories, reading birth stories, hundreds of birth stories I read in my second pregnancy so that I became more comfortable with variations of normal. I think in my mind, as I was prepared for the first time around, Adriana, that I really thought, okay, here is how my birth is going to happen. And, you know, I had this mindset, but I wasn't prepared for the prodromal aspect of it. So I wanted to be prepared for all of the different things that could happen, to the extent that I could control them so that I felt comfortable and confident about my choice to labor at home as long as possible.
And at least be familiar with some of them, like the possibilities.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, because you can't control everything. You can't, like, I'm constantly still learning from from all the births that I go to, which is what makes it so interesting. And you know, there's lots of things that are so fulfilling about it. What, but one of us, like, oh, this is new. Oh, this, like, that variation of normal keeps expanding.
Yes.
Because birth is as unique as we are as individuals. But that seems like a fantastic preparation. And part of why I do these birth stories for the podcast is so that people know how, that's not so strange, right?
That's exactly it. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that I love, you know, musical theater, live theater. It's the same reason that I love birth. Like, anything could happen. You really only get one chance to go through it, and it could be different every time. And I think that's the beauty of it. So I was trying to become more familiar with, you know, all of the different variations and things, you know, that could happen that might make my birth different as I, you know, thought it might be, but still normal.
Yeah. I forgot to ask you, how long for the first one, how far along were you when labor actually kicked in?
So we were able to pinpoint, like, real labor starting around 39 weeks and 3 days. And my son was born at 39 weeks, 6 days.
Okay. So it was still 3 days of a process.
Correct. I had a very long 80-hour labor experience, of which most of it was at the hospital.
Okay. And at what point had your water broken?
My water did not break until after I had the epidural placed. So that was just a few hours before my son was born.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just, you know.
It was why they allowed me to continue to labor, even though I was at a hospital. And typically you have some sort of clock starts and there's some time, but because my water hadn't broken, you know, they allowed me to continue to try to make it through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then the second one, when did it start?
So my second labor began around 8 in the evening is when I believe I went into early labor. It was just 2 days earlier for my second birth. Well, I should say my daughter was born 2 days earlier, but labor was a few days before that. So I believe it was like 39 weeks, maybe the same day I went into labor, 39 weeks, 3 days. And my daughter was born at 39 weeks, 4 days. So I had a much shorter labor experience this time around.
Mm-hmm. So
it's amazing how it's just been a little bit of time, but you know, you start to forget some of these details already.
Well, and then you have another one after this. So that those are probably fresher in your mind. Yeah. Those details. So early labor around 8 p.m., you were 39 weeks in a bit.
What did yes, you and yeah. I was laying in bed with my husband. We were watching, you know, some comedy on TV. I really enjoy at the end of my pregnancies watching comedy. It's a consistent theme of mine. Maybe just, you know, having a reason to laugh when you're otherwise uncomfortable and not sleeping well is something that keeps my spirits going. So I remember some surges beginning, and I didn't tell my husband because I'm a labor denier. after my first bout with prodromal labor, I just, you know, I said, okay, well, this can't be labor. I'm just going to try to sleep or rest. And that's what I did for a few hours. I remember waking up probably in the, you know, 12 o'clock hour, and I was still feeling these rushes, and I got excited. I said, oh, okay, I think this is actually it this time. So I went downstairs, and I had a nice meal full of carbohydrates just to give myself some energy. I contacted my doula, same doula I had the first time around, and I decided to get in my big jetted tub just to, you know, enjoy, relax through labor a little bit. And I think it might have been just a few hours later, 2 or 3 in the morning, I woke up my husband. I said, hey, we're going to have a baby today. And I contacted my mom. She came out to spend the time with my son. I labored in the tub for a few more hours. And I think maybe just a little before 7 a.m., I recall saying to my husband, hey, if we don't leave right now, I don't think we're going to make it. I knew we had a long drive ahead of us. And while I was in communication with my doula, she was actually at, you know, with doulas, there's often overlap between their clients. And she was at a 42-week to the day induction at another local hospital. And so we were just communicating over the phone, and she wasn't present with me at my house. And I said, you know what, I'm going to head to the hospital now. I don't feel like I can make it much longer without going. I don't want to deal with a car ride too late in labor.
Yeah. And you had a 70-minute drive to get there.
That's exactly right. And so the drive was quite comical. We got in the car, and I made a quick 10-second cell phone video. Hey, we're going to have a baby today, I think. And about 5 minutes later, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, the car tractions that that become more intense when you're in the middle of a drive. And I had pretty significant, you know, intense contractions while I was making that drive. And I'm sure worrying my husband because I was in the back seat, you know, kind of on all fours and on the highway. It's not exactly the safest place to be, but you got to do what you got to do. And we got to the hospital around 8:30 a.m. and I was still in my head saying, like, let's just go and see how far along I am. I was terrified they were going to say something like, you're 2 centimeters or 3 centimeters, just because of my previous labor experience. And we arrived to the hospital, pulled up to, you know, the valet area. And I remember someone greeting me saying, you know, would you like to sit in, you know, would you like a wheelchair? And I was like, definitely don't want to sit right now. just let me make my way up to labor and delivery. And not 30 minutes later, my daughter was born.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So when you got up there, like, did they check you, or was it very evident that she was on her way and there was just nothing but getting
it? Was evident. It was evident to them. It was not evident to me. I'm still thinking, you know, I had lots of time. In fact, I had the only room that had a tub in the hospital, and I was thinking that I still had hours to go. So I insisted that they fill the tub. And I remember my midwife saying, Krista, you're not going to make it. You don't have time to even walk to the tub, let alone to get in and labor in the tub. And I said, fill the tub. And I remember her saying, okay, guys, fill the tub just to, you know, appease me. But yet there was no chance that I was going to make it over there. They did check me. I was just leaning over on the wall, actually, at the time, near a couch in the room. And she said, you know, do you want me to check you? And I said, yep, but can you do it right here? I'm not getting on that bed. And she did. She checked me and she said that, you know, I was nearly fully dilated, just a little bit to go. I decided to kind of make my way over. She said, your bag of waters is bulging. I bet if we break this bag of waters, your baby will be here in just a few moments. And I said, okay, but I'm going to go get in the tub, right? Yeah, okay, Krista, you can go get in the tub.
That sounds like labor land talking.
It definitely was. I was just so focused on getting in that tub. And I had a TENS unit that I was using. And I was so happy that the hospital allowed me to continue to use it, because when I had called in advance, they said they actually never had anyone labor with a TENS unit before. So they weren't sure, you know, how they were going to respond to me wanting to use a TENS unit through my labor. And I actually, just truly 10 minutes after we got up to the room, you know, kind of made my way onto the back of the bed, and I was on all fours leaning over the back of the bed. They broke my waters at, I believe it was 9:15 a.m., and my daughter was born at 9:17.
Oof. How were those 2 minutes?
I will be honest with you, and this is true with her personality. She is my easiest baby, and she was my easiest labor. It was complete fetal ejection reflex. I did not push her out whatsoever. It was not extraordinarily intense, at least compared to my other experiences. It was the easiest of my births. My body really knew what it was doing. I trusted my body also. I think with the prodromal aspects of my first labor, I really started to doubt, like, was there something wrong with my body that it couldn't labor correctly, that I was having these, you know, false contractions, if you will, that were unproductive. And my body really took over, and I believed in my body's power to do what it had to do, and it didn't disappoint me.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it seems like things are moving right along. And in that mindset of whether you were consciously or unconsciously ignoring it, you know, like, because denial can be a way of ignoring. Saying, I am going to get into this tub.
Way.
Yeah, right. I'm going to get in the tub. You're focused on the tub. That thinking brain is busy on one thing, and your body's like, okay, you do that. We'll just have a baby over here. It's all good.
That's exactly right. And she was born. I pulled her out, and you know, she had a very short umbilical cord, but I was still able to kind of hold her and turn myself around, and my expressions, in those photos, right after my second birth, are just priceless, because you could see on my face, like, registering, oh my gosh, that actually just happened. You know, it's such a different experience than the first time.
Yeah.
I do recall, Adriana, just some funny things. I really, maybe you relate to this, but it's really hard for me when I hear women talk about things like, oh, the hospital didn't allow me this, or, you know, they let me do this. And I went into that hospital, you know, so late in labor that they really didn't have a lot of choices. Like, I remember them coming and saying they were going to put an IV in my arm. And I said, you absolutely are not. Don't touch me. I'm laboring here. I remember them bringing me consent forms to sign. And I said, definitely not going to sign consent forms. I am in the middle of having a baby. And I thought I was hours away still at that point. I didn't realize I was minutes away. But just the craziness, you know, in hindsight of, you know, asking someone who's minutes away from pushing out a baby to sign paperwork or to, you know, put an IV in her arm, which could be necessary. I understand the reason, you know, they want a hep lock or put an IV in your arm. But I really just said, no, I was not letting them do that. And they didn't really have a choice but to go with what I was allowing. It was, you know, while the hospital sets policy and everything, I very firmly said no to just about everything they asked me.
You were very clear on that, what your wishes were at that point, in terms of just let me labor, mm-hmm. just what I'm doing. And isn't another reason why I am such an advocate and proponent and really focus on how to figure out how people can support their physiology. Because if you support physiology, and of course there's variations, right? But if you do your best to support physiology and let and get out of the way so your body does what it needs to do, it's then there's less need for interventions. There's less need for any of that because they just have to follow your lead. Like you're going, you're a train, it's taken off. You can either come along or, you know, goodbye.
That's exactly right. And I recall like several of the nurses, you know, saying to me after that it was just really inspiring for them to see me like so clearly know, you know, what I needed in my labor space at that time. And it was just to let me go. You know, I didn't want her to check me on the bed in a normal traditional feet up position. I was comfortable leaning over the couch by the wall. And that's where, you know, my midwife thankfully was flexible enough to check me in that position. The nurses, I'm not sure exactly, you know, their experience with physiological birth, but it, you know, they repeatedly said to me, it was just very nice to see me know what my body needed at that time.
Mm-hmm. And it, with this whole conversation, you mentioned of people saying they didn't let me this, they didn't let me that. If you're more in an early thinking brain kind of space, then those conversations can be had. But
that's right.
What is a provider going to do if you're like, I'm not getting on the bed? You can check me here, or like she could be flexible or not check you, basically. Like it was very clear, it seems, that you were not going to move from there. So the, you know, other than grabbing you and forcing you to in a bed, which is clearly violation of human rights and obstetric violence and all of that, like she was not going
to
go there.
But it happens, right? It happens to people. I've heard stories, but yeah, unless they did that, they had to go with what my body was doing. And there was just a difference for me in that trust that I had in my body the second time around to know everything was fine. You know, there, I could have declined the cervical exam altogether. I mostly just needed to know that I wasn't 2 centimeters dilated at that point. I needed, and you know, it was very empowering for me to know that everything was okay. My body was doing exactly what it was supposed to be doing.
So good. Let's take another break. When we come back, let's jump into that third one. We'll be right back. Have you ever been looking for a specific photo on your phone and spend such a long time just scrolling by, not being able to find it, even though you remember when it happened? I know I am constantly frustrated that my photos are deep in the depths of my phone photo roll or scattered over email or text messages, who knows where, that I have received from my husband or my daughter. The bottom line is that I can't easily find them when I want to. Enter Family Album. Family Album is a fantastic family-focused photo sharing app that makes it easy for parents to share photos and videos of their kids with their family. The app is free, offers unlimited storage, and has no ads. I really like so many of their cool features, like the fact that your photos and videos are automatically sorted by date, or that they put together short video collages with 1-second clips highlighting your best photos and videos, so you can watch how your children have grown and changed over time. But one of my favorite things is that Family Album keeps things private so that only people you invite can see your family's photo album. This has been really amazing for my parents and siblings who live in Venezuela because we can now easily share pictures exclusively with them. We started this a few weeks ago and my parents are definitely enjoying getting updated pictures of Annika on their phones, which up to now really had been hard to coordinate and that made me feel super guilty. Now we're all happy. And because they're also able to add comments, we can have little conversations around each memory. I highly recommend you give Family Album a try. I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised. And remember that Family Album is free to use with unlimited storage and has no ads. Family Album does not collect user data and has strong privacy controls in place. Find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web. That's Family Album, all in one word. And we are back talking with Krista Thompson about her births. And you just had a beautiful, you described a gorgeous, beautiful hospital birth, but very physiological and, you know, as close with minimal interventions. So you pulled your baby out, put her on your chest. Was there any separation? How did breastfeeding go? How was it? Clearly it was very different from the first meeting of your first baby. So what did anything specifically stand out to you then?
I was on a mission to get out of the hospital. Like, I was in a mission to stay out of the hospital as long as possible. So my focus after, of course, doting on my new daughter, you know, I believe it was just 10 minutes after she was born. I was like, okay, what do we need to do? Who do I need to talk to? Where's the pediatrician? How do we get out of here? And I think there was a little bit more flexibility with me being a second time mom. They just kept us for 12 hours after. Breastfeeding went fine. I, of course, felt a little bit more confident in my breastfeeding journey, knowing some of the normal first time, you know, issues that you experience. I knew what my body was doing a little bit more the second time. I felt more confident in, you know, my ability to get the baby to latch because the baby knew exactly what she was doing. She knew how to do it. I just had to be calm and patient and give her a chance to do it. And there was no real notable moments in, you know, following my birth other than just my recovery was so much easier. I hear that, you know, that's the case in subsequent births. And of course, not having, you know, had any medication, that certainly made it much simpler as well. And we got out of the hospital just, you know, like I said, 12 hours later and went home as a family of four.
And that thought of giving her the time she needed to figure out what she was going to do because she knew how to do it in terms of latching, breastfeeding, it reminds me, I'm going to link on the show notes an episode by Karen Strange, which talks about the baby's birth experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love how she goes around the country teaching newborn resuscitation mm-hmm. to nursing staff. And but she has such a respect about the physiology and what babies are going through at that moment and how to teach this in a very kind and gentle way and as least invasive as possible. So it's a beautiful way of how she comes into it. And that she always says, now you're on baby time, you have to go slow. Everything.
That's so true.
Slow.
You know, and that will be such a great connection for your listeners. It is my profound belief that, you know, how a baby enters this world and those moments after their birth particularly really shape their personalities and their spirits. My children are the exact personification of their births. their personalities to a T. My son is much more clingy to me. He was separated from me, you know, in the first hours after he was born. He's so such a mama's boy, and he just wants me constantly. My daughter didn't need my help getting her, you know, out, and she doesn't need my help now. She's so independent. And, you know, my last baby, which we'll get into in a minute, you know, born in the water, nice and calm, and she's just the most chill, calm baby. So I think that would be such a great connection for your listeners.
I think, I mean, clearly it's so hard to do any studies and research around that, but I do hear that anecdotally over and over again. So who knows, right? But but in any case, babies do need, they're moving at a different, their bodies are figuring things out in a whole different way. So they need that slow. For sure. So then you had this wonderful birth.
I did. But let me tell you by telling you that my pregnancy, particularly in the beginning, was not this amazing, beautiful journey. For my third one. Okay. It didn't, I call my home birth experience with number three, my daughter Milana, you know, my dream home birth experience. But my pregnancy really was not. and not because I was unhealthy or not because there was anything particular going on with the baby in this pregnancy, but because my husband and I reached a really difficult point several months before this pregnancy came to be. My husband is a recovering alcoholic. And he was really struggling with, he had relapsed, and it was really a lengthy, continuous relapse. right around the time that I had gotten pregnant. And the day that I, found out I was pregnant and told him I was pregnant, he was, it sent him further into a relapse, and he actually moved out of our house the day that I told him that I was pregnant, in a very deep, dark episode of alcoholism and depression. So my pregnancy started off really, really difficult. I was a mom of two kids under two, pregnant with my third baby, and really feeling pretty alone. My mom had just moved out of state, didn't really have much other family close by, and I was kind of in a really rough place. I wanted to have a third baby. We had dreamed of having a third baby, but it wasn't exactly starting how I thought it might.
Well, yeah, it was basically all up to you.
It was. I was kind of running into a one-woman show here.
And two little ones.
Little ones, yes. Like two little ones that needed me for everything still. And you know how it is. I'm also a working full-time mom. And then I was a working full-time, basically single mom because, you know, my husband was pretty far gone at the time. And his relapse progressed. It got worse before it got better, to the point that 3 months into my pregnancy, I had to file for divorce, which was I don't really even believe in divorce, to be honest with you. But there was a point where it was unsafe for my children and I to, continue to be near him and to be exposed to the alcoholism. And unfortunately that's where it led me. So in January this past year, I was led to file for divorce and begin that really difficult process in what is supposed to be a really beautiful time in your life. This was my third pregnancy. I knew it was going to be my last. And I was feeling, immediately, was just so resentful of towards him and the situation. And I spent probably the first 3 months of the year, most of my second trimester, usually the best trimester to everyone, really deep in resentment. And I felt like this pregnancy was being stolen from me. I had been dreaming after my second child was born of having this home birth experience. And I, of course, had begun that process. I'll talk about that in just a minute. But I was really feeling robbed. Like I was feeling that, you know, what I had dreamed of and the mindset and the space, that headspace I really wanted to occupy to prepare for this birth was kind of taken from me.
Right, because you have other things that you needed to focus on.
Yeah, I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was not all rosy. I'm sorry. But
hey, this is a part of life, yeah. And it's a part of my story, and it turned into, I mean, the message that I want to share in that is I had these really terrible things going on, and so many of the details are not just unnecessary, but really somewhat traumatic for me to live through when I go back over it. However, there was a point, it was in April of this past year, it's about, six and a half months pregnant. And I remember sitting down with my doula and saying, like, I need to take this pregnancy back. I have to get this back. Like, this is the last time I'm probably ever going to do this. This baby deserves my attention and love and the effort that I put towards my previous births. And I knew that anything that was going on in my head particularly would prevent me from having the experience that I wanted. So there was just a moment in time, you know, right at the end of that second trimester where I said, this is mine, I'm taking it back. And I really dove into, you know, creating and planning for the home birth that I wanted.
And how were you managing everything else? Because I'm thinking, that's overwhelming on so many levels, right?
Well, Adriana, I run a blog called Recovering Superwoman, and maybe you have a little bit of an understanding why I have that. I decided to pursue that this past year is because I was really feeling like, okay, Krista, it's all on you. You have to do everything. And while that was certainly true to an extent, there is a part of this that really requires not just birth, but life in and of itself. Things are not 100% in your control, no matter what. Not in your job, not in your personal life, not in your relationships, not with your children, their emotions, their behavior. And there was a part of it where I said, I'm going to do everything, but I'm also going to let go. I'll let God take over. I know He'll provide for me. And I will accept the fact that I cannot do it all. I needed to figure out a way to get help into my life. I needed to figure out a way to manage the inconsistencies that my husband, you know, while we were going through this divorce, was going to bring into this process, things that could completely throw off, you know, me, my children. And it was really by embracing that, that I felt letting go gave me control back.
And that is such a powerful, of course, learning, but also just give yourself a little bit of that grace, right? Of my goodness, I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to do it all. And this is, you know, there's a lot going on and we are going to get through it, but you've got to have that flexibility in order to get through it.
That's right.
If you're stuck on a path, oof, it's just harder on yourself.
That's right. And it's, you know, I'm sure moms everywhere would, you know, do well to learn how to give themselves a little bit of grace and their children. I mean, part of, you know, what I write about regularly is, you know, conscious parenting. And a lot of that means letting kids be kids. They have big emotions. They have, you know, big feelings. And all of the things that I was going through were very difficult. But, you know, to a, you know, 1-year-old and a almost 3-year-old at the time, you know, it's very difficult to quantify the things that they were feeling, the effects of, you know, inconsistency and lack of stability that they were trying to manage. And then having a new sibling on the way as well. There was a lot for them to process as well. And part of cutting myself some grace also meant, you know, pouring out grace for them.
So then during that third trimester where you're like, I'm gonna create this home birth that I want and I am going to accept the challenges in my life, but figure a way not to resent them, but move on from them.
That's
right. I'm like, I'm totally like putting, is that what it was happening? Like, I'm just, yeah. Is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I recognized, I mean, just like with, you know, my previous birth experiences, there are things that are out of your control. And there were things in my life that were inherently out of control at this time. And so I chose to accept it. Instead of trying to force things to be, to make them happen a certain way, I just recognized that in order to have the experience that I want to have, I have to, you know, cut the reins a little bit. And I have to say, it's okay. You know, you can't do it all. You might want to, but you know, I even got to a point where I was okay not even wanting to try to be everything to everyone, to keep it all together. It was okay to break down. It was okay to not be the perfect employee because I had so many things in my life that were, you know, distracting me and taking me away. And that's simply okay. And as I worked with my doula and my home birth midwives to kind of create the birth that I wanted to have, that involved very strategically designing what my birth space was going to look like. That was something I struggled with at first because I didn't even know where I was going to be living. I didn't know if I would still be in my house at the time. And then when I realized, okay, listen, you haven't known what the birth space was going to look like at either of the hospitals you gave birth at either. So that's not going to be a prohibitive factor here. Wherever it is, if you're living in this house still, or if you're in an apartment or somewhere else entirely, you know, you can still create the space that you want. And so I spent a lot of time trying to design a space that I felt was warm and inviting, and that it wasn't just the physical appearance of it. It was also, you know, some of the aesthetics and the sounds that I wanted to hear when I was in labor, and you know, whether it was going to be light or dark, or you know, who was going to be in that space. I was just spending a lot of time trying to dream what that might look like to me.
And I think that's a really valid exercise for anybody, no matter where they're giving birth, because you can create a feeling in the space.
Yes.
Even if it's not yours. And that's what we often try to do, that I often try to do with my clients when they give birth at a hospital, by doing dimmer lights or having them bring in things, or we put up fairy lights, or mm-hmm. there's affirmations, and you know, keep the sounds quiet. And so there's a lot you can do, I think, regardless of where, what the walls look like.
That's right. That's right.
So you had designed your birth space, you, in terms of how you want it to feel. You were creating a plan with your midwives, and I'm guessing it's a different provider because these were home birth midwives?
Yes,
or?
Yes. And Pennsylvania is one of those states that is, I think there's 17 of them, that just completely does not license midwives outside of certified nurse midwives, which are typically midwives associated with hospitals or affiliated with obstetricians. And so Pennsylvania does not even recognize, you know, CPMs or, you know, traditional lay midwives in any way. I chose a set of traditional midwives that, you know, have been practicing for 30 years and I felt very comfortable with. But because they weren't licensed midwives, I had, you know, they weren't able to, you know, write scripts for blood work or, you know, bring any medications to labor, even like Pitocin, if I were to hemorrhage after. It's one of my biggest frustrations with, you know, failure to license, you know, midwives more broadly in the state. But nonetheless, like I was so confident in my body. I did establish co-care with, you know, my hospital-based midwives, you know, that I had previously worked with, but I knew that I was going to have a home birth and I continued to plan for that. And so I didn't find out, you know, I didn't have any ultrasounds. I didn't find out the gender of the baby this time around. And, you know, absent some blood work early on just to kind of check levels and everything, I didn't have any testing at all done this pregnancy. I didn't do any glucose testing. I didn't do strep B testing. And whether or not, you know, other people would choose that path, you know, aside for a moment, it was really nice to just trust myself this time. Like I knew my baby was okay. I just had that intuition and I felt comfortable and confident to proceed, you know, without having done all of that.
Mm-hmm. And so you've got all these things in place and the due date is coming close. How were you feeling at that point?
So I was feeling excited and ready. I had two prominent things on my mind as my due date approached, which was in the month of July of this past year. And the first was, I hadn't had my mom at any of my previous births. I'm kind of I didn't have a lot of people, really. It was just myself, my husband, my doula, and the midwives. And I really wanted to give my mom the opportunity to be at this birth. I knew it was going to be my last. I was her only daughter, and this was the only chance she'd really ever have to attend a birth. And I wanted her to see, you know, this very non-traditional way, at least for my family, of giving birth. And I wanted her to be able to experience it. However, she had moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, and was several states away. So prominent on my mind was, you know, whether I would be able to let her know I went into labor enough time to make it, to see the birth. So that was one thing on my mind. And the second was, what to do about my husband that I was divorcing. While he had reestablished recovery for a few months by the time July came around, I really didn't know if I wanted him in my birth space or not. It was the only X factor, really, and the most inconsistent part. And I really didn't know what to do with him. So I spent a lot of time in prayer and trying to reflect on those two things, how to get my mom to my birth in enough time and whether or not I had wanted, you know, my husband there.
Mm. And so how did things start? How far along were you? What happened?
So this time I went into labor. I think it's pretty funny, at least. My best friend lives in Orlando, Florida, and she happened to be in town right after 4th of July for her baby shower. She was pregnant with her first, maybe about 32 weeks at the time. And the morning of July 6th, I woke up and it was the day of her shower. Of course, I'm pregnant with two kids. A husband that's kind of around, sometimes around, not really. And I really didn't want to get ready, drive an hour and a half for her shower, go to the shower and come home. I was feeling like I was probably going to go into labor. But I also knew if I didn't go to that baby shower, that my baby would never come. You know how it is. Like, you, if you don't make plans, that baby's just going to stay cooking forever. So I said, hey, I'll get ready. I'll take the kids. We'll go to this baby shower. And sure enough, as I'm at that shower, like, I felt the early labor signs. I was, you know, my body was kind of clearing out, making some space. So run into the bathroom every 10 minutes. And I think maybe some good oxytocin was flowing from seeing all the cute little baby girl clothes that she was opening at her shower. So I think that really helped move things along for me. And later in the afternoon, after the shower's over, I drove home with my son. And I said, you know what, I'm going to call my mom. I'm going to tell her, you know what, why don't you jump on a plane and get here? Because I'm pretty sure this baby's coming in the next 48 hours. And she ended up coming in. She made it in a few hours later that night, the night of July 6th. I was laying in my bed, very similar to how active labor started with my daughter, and the surges really became stronger. They were picking up speed. And I was just laying there for a little bit. And Adriana, and I know I've spoken to you about this before, but it was really the podcast that you released the week before my child was born. That was like your 10 most useful steps for, you know, for labor.
And, oh, my birth mantras. Yeah.
Yep. Your birth mantras. And it, I was listening to it that day on the way home from that shower, you know, and I just kept hearing you say, ignore it until you can't, ignore it until you can't. And so I just kind of went on with my night. My mom arrived and she's like, I thought you were in labor. Like, what do you mean you're going to lay down and go to bed? And I was like, yep, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to lay down and try to ignore it and sleep for a little bit. And I just felt so confident, like having heard that over in my head over and over again. And I just rested for a few hours. I didn't get to go back to sleep. I tried, but I wasn't able to. And I contacted my doula and my midwives probably around 10 o'clock that night. And I said, you know, hey, I think it would make me comfortable, since, you know, you're all an hour away from me, if you just head over and check. I think things are about to get started. And sure enough, like, by the time they got there, I was definitely like well into labor land. I was laboring in this chaise lounge, which I had no intention of laboring in. It was just a chair that was in my room. But for whatever reason, while I was, you know, going through these rushes, it just seemed like the most comfortable place for me to be. And I remember my doula, you know, placing her hands on my shoulders and saying, hey, rock star, you know, shortly after she arrived. And, you know, I turned around to go give her a hug. And I noticed that my midwives were there. My birth photographer was like, I didn't hear anyone enter my space. So not only were they so quiet, but I was really in labor land. Like, I just heard nothing else going on. And so, you know, when I turned around and saw them there, I was shocked. I had no idea how long they had been there. Usually a pretty good sign that labor's, you know, you're well into labor.
Yeah. And the thing is, you get that narrow tunnel vision, right? It's not like you're completely out of it. It's just that focus narrows.
That's exactly right. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because my doula said to me, you know, in between rushes, she said, can you still hear the music? And I said, of course I can hear the music. Like, what kind of question is that? And I realized that she was trying to establish like how far I was, just by, you know, how narrow was that focus of mine. And it's funny, because probably a song or two later, like, there was just, I heard no music after that, like, not during the rush, not after it. So like, she literally asked me the question as I was on the precipice of really falling deep into that labor land. And my midwives were sitting there knitting in the corner, just giving me space to labor. They came over and checked the heartbeat once or twice, you know, over the next hour or two. I think their records say that I climbed into the birth pool right around 1 a.m. And I remember being very conscious of the fact when I was getting to the birth pool, like, was it too early? It definitely wasn't, because my daughter was born like 20 minutes later. But I remember thinking, oh, is this, you know, am I getting in too early? Am I going to slow it down? But I had asked my midwives to really provide me an unassisted labor experience. I wanted them to be there if I needed something or if the baby needed something, but I really just wanted to be hands off. I was very confident at this point that my body definitely knew what it was doing. And so I climbed into the tub. I spent some time with my doula, just kind of talking through some affirmations. I really told her what I knew what I needed. And I was having a little bit of fear because, in my previous labors, my water was broken for me, and my water hadn't broken at this point. I was pretty certain I was in transition or very near transition. And I kept thinking, oh, is this going to be something that, you know, holds my baby in basically? I said, I need you to talk to me about, you know, that it's okay that my water hasn't broken. And so she, you know, reassured me and let me know that happens all the time. I can't remember exactly what she said to me, but it did the trick for me. It really worked. I should say that I did allow my husband to be there, for that birth. And, there was a moment probably right before I started pushing that, he came over to me and he actually kissed me. I'm sure he's heard me say the Ina May logic of what gets the baby in, gets the baby out. And he said, like, you just really looked like you needed, you know, a burst of hormones. And it caught me by surprise, given the fact that we were divorcing. But it really did do the trick. And a moment later, my water broke. And I think that was about 1:20 a.m. or so. And my daughter was born at 1:28, completely hands off. I think I had a cervical lip that I was trying to push through. And so it was a little bit more work compared to my previous experience with my daughter, where I really didn't have to push at all. And so I was pushing a little bit more. I was in an interesting position, kind of like squatting, standing up, but in the pool. I don't know why that's where my body led me to, but that's what it did. And, she came out just in one pretty smooth push and, right up into my arms. I will tell you, I was certain she was a boy as I was looking at her. During my pregnancy, I wasn't feeling strong one way or another, but looking at her, I was like, oh, okay, this is definitely my second son. And, you know, we're sitting there for the moments after, and I'm just holding her. My son was there, present for her birth. And it occurred to me like 10 minutes later, I didn't actually confirm that it was a boy or a girl. I was like, okay, I'll just check. I'm sure it's a boy. And it was, you know, I see that it was another girl. And I had really, really, I think in my heart, been hoping for another girl. And I didn't realize it until that moment. When I, you know, elatedly screamed, it's a girl. And it was just such a beautiful, beautiful moment as I sat there and, you know, with my fairy lights hanging right next to the tub, this beautiful like red fabric next to it, this massive birth pool, my son right over my shoulder, leaning in and doting on his new baby sister. And I was so proud of myself for creating this birth and being able to have this birth with everything that had been going on in my life. It wasn't just achieving the home birth experience and the sense of empowerment that just comes when you give birth anyway. I was so proud that I was able to put aside this tragedy of what, you know, had befallen my life and create this beautiful space for this girl to be born. And it's something that will stay with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that sounds like it was a very, very even healing birth.
It was. I didn't know I needed that birth to heal me from the experience that I had been going through during the pregnancy, but that's exactly what it did. People often talk about, like, you know, birth being healing from previous labor or birth experiences, but it wasn't just that. It was really, I felt whole, you know, despite so many things having been going on that were out of my control and quite difficult. It really made me feel that I could do anything.
Hmm. And you said your mom was there.
She was.
And I keep thinking about your mom. How was she with it all? For some reason, she keeps popping into my mind.
Yeah, you know, so I think just watching her daughter, both for both of my parents, watching me go through this last year has been hard for them. it's as it would for any parent watching their child kind of go through a difficult situation. I know that she was incredibly empowered, you know, as a mom by my experience. I know she was also very scared. I am definitely the disruptive thinker in my family, in my life, in my profession. It's what I'm good at. So I always am challenging the status quo and how things have to be done and trying to make it better. But I think like many others in my life, my mom was one, like, I just don't understand why you're not having the baby in the hospital. But she trusted me and she believed in me. And, you know, it was an educational experience for her as well. I really didn't see or feel her presence much in the room during my labor or, you know, right before the baby was born. But when I look at some of the pictures from my birth, like, I could see that she was scared on her face. She was worried. And she describes the about 7 seconds it took from, I really wanted my baby to come out of the water gently and like slowly. And she said it was agonizing for her just not to dive in and pull the baby out of the water. And I just think that's such a, you know, grandma kind of thing to say. Like, you see a baby underwater and your just instinct is to pull them out and, you know, get them out. But it was a normal and natural thing. And I think it was really educational and informative for her.
And I'll also link on the show notes the episode on water birth, because there's a pressure differential, right? That it isn't until the air hits the baby's face that they inhale.
And it is so important to know that. Like, I knew that. I knew that, you know, it was okay. She was, you know, she was connected to the placenta. I knew the temperature of the water was warm enough that there wouldn't be, you know, kind of a reason for her to try to breathe underwater. Because I had listened to stories like that and read so many stories and even, you know, in other podcasts where I just heard and watched water birth and I knew what was normal. My daughter didn't cry after she was born, and I'm sure your episode you know, on water birth will confirm it. It's actually quite normal for water babies to not, you know, cry out right away. They have a very gentle entry into the world when they're born in the water. And she wasn't crying. And I know that my mom was like worried because she wasn't crying. And I wasn't. I knew she was fine. She was breathing. And, you know, APGAR really assesses crying or breathing, you know, in that particular part of the score. And I felt comfortable because I knew that was normal.
There's a saying that I've heard recently. It's if crying was good for the lungs, because they always say, you know, we need to get baby here to get a good cry, for it's good for their lungs. If crying was good for the lungs, then like bleeding would be good for the body.
Wow, right? What a good what a good saying.
Right, like, why do you need to push it to the extreme? And I understand that they want. But it's
one of those things where what's best for the people around the baby is not always what's best for the baby, right? Like, it makes us more comfortable when we hear a baby cry after they're born. That doesn't mean that's what makes the baby more comfortable. The baby doesn't need to breathe, doesn't need the stimulation in most, you know, scenarios.
Well, and it also goes back to, you have to... Physiology definitely has the process, because it's that one that has us here for survival. And I always think about, for example, we weren't born with clamps and scissors to cut and clamp the cord. However, there's the Walker's jelly, which is the white stuff that protects the arteries and the vein around the cord, that makes it so that you can even have a knot in the cord and it still protects it from being clamped. Once that pulse, the transfer of the pulsation of blood from the placenta to baby, once that balances out and stops, that Walker's jelly liquefies and self-clamps.
It's so cool.
Right? It's so, like, amazing. Things like that, right? Your baby has all these mechanisms inside of them to make sure that the breathing thing works. However, we also need to put into context how the birth was beforehand. And if it was a birth that was stressful, or it was a lot of medications or a lot of interventions, like, how much did that birth derail from physiology? Then some babies might need some more resuscitation because that process was harder.
That's right.
Yeah, so it's tough. I get that in the hospital. And like you were saying with your second birth, that the nurses felt like they, you know, you almost gave them the trust in birth back to them, because that's not, unfortunately, an experience they see that often.
Yep. There was one particular a student at my second birth that said to me that that was the first time she had seen a natural birth. And she didn't know what to do.
Meaning an unmedicated
birth, vaginal birth. Yes. Now, I mean, she could have been there for 2 days. I don't know. But, you know, she made a point to mention it, and she was just kind of astounded at the process, that nobody needed to help me do it in that particular instance, because it was a pure physiological birth. You know, no one needed to do anything other than just let the baby be and let me be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I am so glad that you had this fantastic experience seems like exactly what you were looking for and what you were needing.
It was. And isn't it amazing, like, how our babies and our bodies, they do know what we need. Like, I was able to still achieve this, you know, experience that I tried to dream of, and really it was. I know birth doesn't always, you know, fall that way, but, you know, it was just really remarkable to me that there's so much of your mind that you need to let go of during actual labor and delivery. But the work that I did in preparing, you know, up to that point really allowed my body to take over with confidence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to be wrapping up, but before we do that, was there anything you wanted to make sure you got through that we haven't mentioned yet?
You know, I think the most important thing that I could possibly share was, while I was prepared. I mean, I was more prepared than most for my first birth. You really don't know what you don't know until you're in the experience. And the most helpful thing that I could do, and I had done in my subsequent births, was be exposed to normal birth stories. Your podcast is so wonderful to give people the chance to hear hundreds of times of women giving birth. And there's nothing that I could do, or I think any mom could do, to prepare for being a mother more than preparing for the journey to motherhood and in that labor and delivery experience. And so I just would love to, tell your listeners that whether you're a new mom or about to be a new mom, or you just love, you know, hearing birth stories, this is really the best thing that you could do to prepare yourself, for your potential birth experiences, or just for life. I mean, the things that I have learned in listening to birth stories have echoed into my professional life. I mean, the advocacy that I learned to have for myself, certainly as a lawyer for a living, has translated into my profession. And you're really going to do yourself the best favor in life by continuing to expose yourself to these stories.
Yay. I love that. And the stories. People love the story. I love the stories. They are magical. Thank you so very much for sharing with us today this such amazing and magical birth story, and along with the other two in that I love the idea of you had this progression into home birth. That's so cool.
I do too. I'm glad that I was able to experience every side of the spectrum.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. And please do join me and the fabulous Abby Thuring, also known as the Badass Breastfeeder, this Thursday, January 16th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time at facebook.com/birthful for a live event with giveaways and to celebrate Birthful's 5 years. We'll continue our celebration. I will be doing a new Facebook Live with guests and giveaways every Thursday through the month of January, so do join us. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the amazing Birthful patrons, and by the wonderful people at Vistaprint and Family Album. To get free shipping on all your business cards, any style, any quantity, go to vistaprint.com and enter the promo code Birthful. It's a limited time offer. And find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin MacLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Oh, and here is what Krista had for breakfast.
My breakfast began at 3:30 this morning. I had a banana, some Honey Bunches of Oats, and that's what I had.
I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2020 by Adriana Lozada.